these guys were letter writing machines. It's hard to imagine how they got anything done other than write letters, because they wrote constantly to a wide range of friends about all kinds of subjects. It's been suggested that Burney had 1,200 correspondents over his lifetime. Purdy also wrote to virtually every writer you can imagine in the Canadian literary world. My name is Nicholas Bradley, and I'm an associate professor in the Department of English at the University of Victoria. And the name of the piece is So Damn Human, Earl Burney and Al Purdy in Correspondence. I've been reading the poetry of Earl Burney and Al Purdy for a long time, and in the case of both of the poets, the life figures very prominently in the poetry, so that if you read the poetry closely, you end up coming to know a lot about these two men. They both wrote autobiographically much of the time, and so from reading their poetry, I became interested in how other aspects of their lives were written, and each of the poets was a prolific correspondent, and so I've come to become interested in their letters because the letters themselves bear so strongly on the poems.
Burney, Vancouver, to Purdy, Ameliasburg, October 16th, 1972. Dear Al, your letter's been around for a few days because I caught flu at the Edmonton conference and went about to make it worse by flying up to PG on the 12th and back the next day to read at Simon Fraser, and all this weekend feeling lousy and trying to remember what the hell I did say to you about Beat Joe McLeod. 1. Needs a little overall polishing. Pruning maybe is the better word, e.g. line 2 isn't both unnecessary. 4. Can this loaves and fishes image stand up to analysis? If not, isn't it slightly spurious as an extension of acts of God or Jesus or whomever? 8. Cloud in trousers. Since surely they're all in trousers, including Sadler, what's being said beyond the jingle?
Purdy, Ameliasburg, to Burney, Vancouver, October 21st, 1972.
Dear Earl,
thanks for the precy on poem. You know more about poems, both past and present, than I ever will, and I remember thinking how valuable those comments of yours were at the time. Then forgot, Jesus. As for that snide remark beginning, I think we lesser mortals, fuck that crap. It's a reverse put-down, as you well know. Cut it out. Incidentally, the reason for the cloud and trousers bit in the poem was several, one of which I thought you'd know. Mayakovsky's Cloud and Trousers. 2. The rhyming sound of cloud with McLeod. 3. The fact that it seemed his, McLeod's, character. I have your letter pinned up where I can't miss it when I get back to that poem, as I will. You will have to stay at a better class of motel next time so you can get larger paper more suited to length of letter so you don't have to run over onto the advertising. Purdy revised his poems a lot. He went through many drafts in writing virtually all of his poems. And his letters to Burney and other poets served as part of this editorial process. So he was collecting opinions from various friends, and he would take those opinions and use them as he was going through drafts of his poems. I think one of the things that Burney often told him was that he had to be more precise. Purdy tends to be a rambling poet, and this is part of his style, but Burney often told him that he needed to polish the poems, to take parts out, to be more concise. And I think you can see that in Beat Joe McLeod. Burney gives Purdy a lot of very careful attention about the shape of the poem. And Purdy takes this advice to heart, especially when it comes, I think, to positioning the Purdy persona in the poem relative to the Gil Sadler persona in the poem. Burney had a sharp eye for poetic point of view, and Purdy takes that advice in revising this poem. Beat Joe McLeod, for Gil Sadler of the Promisewell Troller out of Tofino, B.C. Steering between rocks and waterspouts, recent and ancient acts of God, brain crowded with heroes on a street full of losers and failures, repeating your slogan, Beat Joe McLeod, MacLeod the record setter, MacLeod swaggering among his own certainties, MacLeod the cloud in trousers. I keep thinking how I think you think and say, Gil, do you really want that paragon, complete angler, and possibly inhuman being for emblem of what's best in you? Do you really want to match handsprings on the salt chuck, match yourself with anything but yourself, and water spouts in the great king Tai hull dripping onto the dirty boat, and high thunderclouds boding your downfall, lightning bragging its jagged victory? Well, I've had heroes and failed them. I'd rather say that than they failed me, but finally their gods were not mine. Simple enough, but it isn't simple. Evidence changes in the act of doing, and you see it or don't. But that doesn't matter, that's me. You is you, and MacLeod is he who relinquished himself little by little with indirection, with negative hints of how not to catch fish. His frozen knowledge melted, allowed suspicious kindness rationed over 3 years of apprenticeship, touched fire in you, gave you what he lost out of himself years ago, in fact, dreams, dreams other than money. When MacLeod shakes hands with me, I have this vision of everyone trying to beat everyone else. His arrogant aura septic as decay. My hand bones crunch slightly and I smile, innocent like, good morning, nice to meet you, and ah, what a liar I am. Thinking Sadler worships the guy, this larva in the human pupa stage, me carried away by an intuition on small evidence of evil, evil slumbering in the bone. Each of them was a terrible typist. I think Al was worse than Earl, but it would have been a close contest. And when you read the original letters, they are full of typing errors, as well as various other kinds of errors, spelling mistakes, the lack of punctuation, grammatical errors, coffee stains, wine stains. The letters are full of complaints about how much work it is to write letters. They didn't necessarily enjoy this, but they knew that writing was important and they had to sit down and grind it out.